From a basement in Ealing, a team of ineffectual superheroes casts a watchful eye over the world of nerd. Whenever there's a movie trailer to be dissected, whenever there's a Joss Whedon project to be discussed, whenever there's a squeeze to be squeezed, there will be... The Dork Avengers!
Hello and welcome to issue 8 of the Dork Avengers Assemble podcast. The podcast which bears only a superficial resemblance to the actor Patrick McNee.
Wait, issue 8? I thought last issue you decided to renumber to volume 2, issue 1.
Yeah, we've reverted to our original numbering.
Right, so we're not volume 2 anymore?
No.
You're worse than Marvel.
Nobody's worse than Marvel. Apart from DC.
Ooh, a cutting remark for a not-so-cutting podcast.
I'm Pete Dillon Trenchard and with me is Duncan Heaney.
That's it? No Duncan John from Garfield Heaney or no Duncan Harold Bishop Heaney or anything like that?
We're 8 podcasts in. I think you've become a ludicrous enough character in your own accord now.
For heaven's sake, stop feeling so sorry for yourself. It's very unappealing, Susan.
So, Dunk, what treats have we got in store for the listeners?
Well, we play Statler and Waldorf and review the Muppets. We find out that in the Forum Hall of Fame, yeah, there's no forum zanier than Ducky Boo's, the Duckular Forum. And you introduced me to a film that has gained a certain legendary reputation over the last few years.
No clues, but was it tearing you apart?
It certainly was, Pete. It certainly was.
So let's play the music, light the lights, stick our hands up a frog's anus and get on with the show.
That was wonderful.
Bravo.
I loved that.
Oh, it was great.
Well, it was pretty good.
Well, it wasn't bad.
Well, there were parts of it that weren't very good,
it
though.
It could have been a lot better.
I didn't really like it.
It was pretty terrible.
It was bad.
It was awful.
I was terrible.
Get him away.
Hey, boo.
Boo.
So, Pete, what have you been up to in the 6 years since the last podcast came out?
Well, Dunk, unlike you, I've been busy leaving the house quite a lot and gigging and generally impressing people with my wit and having them refuse to sleep with me when I beg them to afterwards. Yeah, it's been same old. But I did have my phone stolen, which was a fun experience.
Well, don't look at me. I was in my bedroom, as you said.
Yeah, no, I have only myself to blame for what happened, although if the insurance company's listening, wasn't my fault.
So what were you doing that made you take your eyes off your phone?
Well, Dunk, I was in a busy central London restaurant in London's cultural West End.
Hold on, I've known you long enough to translate this. You were in McDonald's.
I was in McDonald's.
You're in McDonald's.
Oh, I just went in for a drink. That was all I had.
Okay, so you went in for a supersized meal?
Oh, they're legally not allowed to do supersized anymore.
Really?
Because of people like us.
Right, so you went in for a large meal. Let me guess, what's the biggest burger McDonald's does? You had a Big Tasty.
With bacon.
Big Tasty with bacon.
Yeah, medium fries.
So how's this diet going, Pete?
Well, actually, because the diet doesn't start until the last podcast comes out, we're recording this on the day before the last podcast comes out.
So is that why you haven't been editing it?
Pretty much, yeah.
Right. Anyway, back to the phone story.
Yeah, so I was in McDonald's and, you know, I was watching a piece of cultural heritage on my MP3 player.
You're watching stupid YouTube videos?
Actually, no, don't. That's where you're wrong. You clearly don't know me very well at all. I was watching an episode of ecological 90s kids cartoon Captain Planet and the Planeteers.
So you were so transfixed in the exciting adventures of the Power of Heart.
Hey, Martin Sheen had cut down a tree. It was getting serious.
Martin Sheen was not in Captain Planet.
He was.
Was he?
Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah, because Martin Sheen's quality threshold's so high. Amazing Spider-Man.
Yes. Let's not get into that decision.
No, Dunk, we haven't seen it yet. We don't know. It's definitely going to be bad. But it probably is.
It probably is. I mean, they can't even get the costume right.
Let's not get into that one again.
Okay.
It has to be said, the manager in McDonald's was phenomenally useless. He told me to call 911.
He has a fundamental misunderstanding of what country's in, clearly.
Well, I'm thinking maybe he meant call the boy band 911 from the 90s.
Well, what use would they be?
I know, I mean, their track record in this is unproven at best.
I mean, they could maybe cheer you up with a jaunty song.
True. He told me several times to call 911, but he wouldn't actually let me behind the counter to use the phone, presumably in case I discover that the magic secret of McDonald's isn't love after all.
The magic secret of McDonald's is their special sauce.
The magic secret of McDonald's is idiots like us who keep going there every Saturday.
Hey, speak for yourself. I go to a better class of place like Nando's.
No, you only go to Nando's for dinner. You go to McDonald's for lunch.
I go to Burger King for brunch. I'm not sure what role KFC plays in the day-to-day eating habits.
2 o'clock in the morning when you've finished playing Skyrim.
You never finish playing Skyrim, Pete.
Skyrim finishes playing with you.
Anyway, back to the phone story.
The thing is, you told me to call the emergency services, but I'm not sure that me not being able to update my Twitter counts as an emergency.
Especially since I'm pretty sure you gave up Twitter less than 2 weeks ago.
I did, yeah.
So how did that work out for you, Pete?
Well, I realised that the only thing standing between me and my crippling depression was the endless noise that was Twitter, so I came back.
This is what I've been trying to tell you. You can't cut out social media, because if you cut out social media, all that's going to be left is the voices in your head. And they tell you to do stuff.
Yeah, quite genuinely, because I don't want to brag, but I had 280 followers before I quit Twitter.
Most of them were spam bots, mind.
Most spam bots, but now I've got 52. So, if anyone's listening and would like to follow me on Twitter, and let's face it, after hearing this, why wouldn't you? Please follow me, the Geek PDT.
I don't know why you're so upset about only having 52. DC only has 52 now, and that's proven very successful.
Yeah, but I think I'd be less disappointed if my female followers dressed as scantily as the women in DC's new 52.
Oh well, Pete, sounds like you're having a faintly crappy time. But that's karma coming to bite you on the arse for not editing the podcast.
I've been leaving the house. What have you been doing?
Leaving the house?
Really?
Yeah, I've left my room multiple times.
Going to the toilet doesn't count.
Well, I've also left my room because I'm looking for another room in a different house to never leave.
Okay, how's this been going for you?
Oh, house hunting is one of the most depressing things in the world. People are always going on about, you know, World War II, really stressful. Vietnam, oh man, I can't feel my legs, I'm so stressed out. They're just wandering around London for hours every evening looking at different houses.
Are you actually comparing your flat hunting to the massacre of the Jews?
Should have said World War I, really. I have seen some decent places, mind you. One of the first places I looked at was a house full of models, believe it or not. Well, technically, one was an MTV presenter.
How did this work out for you, Dunk?
I think it went...
Did you just in your pants and then leave?
No, Pete. I'm a little bit more classy than that. I in their toilet then left. No, I made conversation.
This seems unlikely. Okay, let's role play here, Dunk.
Oh, fine. I'll get the leathers.
So I'm the sexy MTV presenter. So, hi, Dunk.
They didn't know my name.
Did you tell them your name at any point?
Maybe. I think so. I must have done, right?
Well, normal social convention would dictate that you would, so you probably didn't. Okay, so knock on the door.
No, it wasn't squeaky.
Was it not?
No, it was actually quite a well-maintained door. I looked at the door and I thought, you know what? That is a well-maintained door.
Okay, so I'm opening the door. Oh, hello.
I haven't knocked yet.
Right, okay. Knock again.
Oh, ow.
Oh, hello. All right, you'll just have to excuse me. I was just playing with some of my friends in the bathroom.
No, that didn't happen.
It wasn't a sexy model party.
No.
Okay, fine. Hello, Chuck.
I haven't knocked yet.
Hello, Chuck.
No, it wasn't Hilary DeVay.
Oh. Oh, hello.
Hello. I'm here to look at the flat.
Please come in.
Thank you very much.
I mean, you should know that I've already decided that you're not attractive enough to live with us. But please, have a look around anyway.
Well, that was clearly the unspoken reaction, yes.
So you don't think that you left a great impression on them?
At one point, I started droning about video games to one of them.
That's bound to have worked.
I don't know how we got into the discussion. Don't know how that even happened. Generally, I try not to talk about video games to people because I know how deeply tedious it is. I mean, when you start talking about Babylon 5, it's the dullest thing in the world.
It's one of the seminal sci-fi series of the 1990s. It's a disservice to you for me not to talk about it.
Just saying, I've seen more interesting things come out of my arse.
Okay, so you managed to wow the models with your conversational skills.
Yeah.
Have you heard back from them since?
No.
No.
See, I actually thought it went fairly well on the face of it, you know?
What possibly gave you this impression?
Well, you know, they were quite impressed with my bottle of Tango Turbo that I sprayed in my eyeball by accident.
Right.
You know, it's this new Tango stuff that comes in like an aerosol.
Have you just been using orange-flavoured deodorant?
No. Like, certainly, at least one of the models kind of had that look of, you know, I've experienced that.
So you managed to endear yourself to them with your ineptitude...
Yeah, so I don't feel it went dreadfully, in all honesty, Pete, but, you know, that was a week ago and they haven't called me back, so...
And I think it probably went a lot worse than you suspect it did.
Yeah. So that's pretty much my flat hunt, Pete. I haven't found anywhere yet at the time of recording.
By the time you listen to this, Dunk will actually be homeless.
Living on the street, living off my wits, so going hungry. The whole thing is just kind of getting quite urgent now, you know? All I want is just for some friend to turn around and say, Duncan... If you need somewhere to stay for a few days, that's absolutely fine with me. I'll put you up. So all I want, just somebody to say that. Some friend of mine to say that.
So I guess all you need to do now is make some friends.
Just some friend. Some friend. Maybe someone I did a podcast with.
Have you asked Chris Brosnahan?
I give up. Let's review Muppets.
Hello. I'm actor, writer and comedian Peter Dylan Trenchard from the Dork Avengers podcast, and also from the background of the IT crowd that one time. As a geek, I don't get much communication with the outside world, so when people send me email messages, it means a lot. If you'd like to get in touch with the Dork Avengers podcast, then please, please email us at dorkavengerspodcast@gmail.com, especially if you're an attractive lady. Or even an unattractive one, really. I don't think I can afford to be picky anymore.
It's now time for the film review, and usually I quite dread this section because it means that I've seen some shit film like Sherlock Holmes or Johnny English or Tintin.
Or Mission Impossible, Ghost Protocol. You have to say it that way. But you were looking forward to this particular film. You've been going on about it for months. I think you mentioned it on previous podcasts even.
I certainly have. I mean, before we started recording this podcast, I'd probably go and see about one film a year at the cinema, and this would have been that film.
Okay, well, I think you've probably teased it enough. What film was it, Pete?
It was, drum roll.
Oh, ouch.
The Artist.
Yo, The Artist, yes. Finally, after weeks of seeing absolute rubbish, we finally got some culture, some Oscar-worthy material. You know, black and white silent film tribute that has a lot to say and some fantastic performances.
Yeah, I was lying. It was The Muppets.
Oh.
Waka Waka! It's a top film. I don't want to give away my review, but it's a top film. And Dunk, do you want to tell people what this phenomena is all about?
So this is the relaunch, essentially, of The Muppets. It's set many years after The Muppets have split up and gone their separate ways. After an evil oil tycoon threatens to demolish Muppet Studios, Jason Segel from How I Met Your Mother reassembles The Muppets to save the day through song, dance and silly jokes. Pete, you liked it. Why did you like it?
It's The Muppets, man.
End of review.
Pretty much. I think The Muppets are genuinely kind of classic characters, you know, that, you know, they're a magical group. They've got all these conflicting personalities, but most of all, they've got this kind of knowing sense of humour. I mean, there's so many great jokes in this film.
Oh, lovable characters, conflicting personality, full of jokes. Like you're describing, take that.
No, because The Muppets had good songs. So, I mean, I quite naturally loved it. What did you make of it?
I liked it. I thought the songs were good.
Yeah, the songs were written by Brett McKenzie from Flight of the Conchords, weren't they?
Yes, sort of. The few new ones were. There was a lot of repeated Muppet material and quite a few just generic rock songs. There's montage music.
Yeah, but they were put in such a brilliant way. I mean, the We Built This City montage to rebuild the studio. That's a classic moment.
I wouldn't say it's a classic moment, it's a good moment.
Every moment in this film was a classic moment, Duncan.
No, it was a decent film, Pete. It was funny.
Yes, it was.
The performances were mostly good.
All good.
Mostly good.
Which ones were bad, Dunk?
I thought Amy Adams was a bit iffy.
Ow! Amy Adams is the hot one.
No, Miss Piggy is the hot one.
Yeah.
So the only performance I actually thought was a little bit off was Kermit.
Really?
Every line. I mean, I get Kermit's meant to be sad through much of this film. You know, the Muppets have gone their separate ways. He's living alone.
And he's got a hand up his backside.
Well, that would depress anyone. Well, except me, probably. I'd be grateful for the attention. But, yeah, every line Kermit delivers was kind of, oh, we used to be the Muppets, but now it's too late for us. Everything is delivered in this kind of voice. Really slightly too quiet. I sound like I want to slit my froggy wrists.
Do frogs have wrists?
They have flippers. But other than Kermit, everyone was decent. The oil tycoon was good. Underdeveloped, but...
I think that kind of brings us on to the one point of contention I have with the movie. There were a lot of deleted scenes, and it showed. Because, I mean, the oil baron's motivation was all revealed in scenes that were cut from the film. The fact that he had a birthday party as a kid, and the Muppets performed at it, and he couldn't laugh at it. That's why you get things like, throughout the film, he's going, maniacal laugh,
Instead of actually laughing.
But the most heinous of these deleted scenes was the deleted ending.
Yeah, okay, so warning, spoilers now.
Yeah, we are going to go into some detail about the ending, so maybe skip forward 5 minutes to the forum section.
So what happens at the end of the film is that the Muppets have to raise $10 million to save the studio. They fail.
Miserably.
But as they leave, you know, they're back together as a family. even though they've lost the studio and the Muppets name, you know, they feel like they've won because they're back together and everything's happy and they sing a happy song about it, except for the fact the bad guy has won and they've lost everything. And obviously realising this, in the credits there's a moment where the bad guy gets conked on the head and suddenly gives everything back over the credits.
The actual fact that he's given everything back is revealed in a newspaper headline, which is not the way to provide a fitting denouement to the film.
No. How did it actually end?
In the finished film, they've almost got the totaliser up to 1 million. And it stops at $9,999,999. But then it's revealed that actually the totaliser was malfunctioning and they'd only raised just under $1 million. But in the original film, that didn't happen. But then Statler and Waldorf decide that they enjoyed the show enough to give it one last dollar. And, you know, that's a great ending.
Yes, it is, because A, it redeems Statler and Waldorf for what they do at the start of the film.
Yeah.
Also, it kind of validates the return of the Muppets to a certain extent. Yeah, and it is just a satisfying ending that doesn't rely on some random Deus Ex Machina over the credits, which is a hugely unsatisfying way to end the film.
So obviously the Muppets aren't the only characters in the film. There's a couple of new ones. There's Walter. He's the Muppet who's grown up as a big fan of the Muppets, and so he goes to the Muppet Studios and kind of moves the plot along. I've read a lot of criticism, actually, about the fact that those characters took up quite a lot of the film, both Walter and his human friends.
Putting it through Jason Segel's eyes and through Walter's made it possible to introduce the Muppets in a way that gave each character kind of a spotlight, a moment to kind of shine and do something, but also introduce them to people that, you know, may not be familiar with anyone other than Kermit. So Jason Segel, who is one of the writers of the film, obviously has a lot of love for the Muppets. I thought that even though he was kind of one of the main characters of the film, I thought he did give enough space for the other characters to show. Certainly, the second half of the film takes the spotlight well off him.
Yeah.
And shines it onto the Muppets.
And that's another thing. People have been saying that the last half hour of the show where they do the Muppet show itself could and should be longer. I really disagree with that.
No.
I've actually gone back to rewatching some of the old Muppet show episodes recently, and there's so much random shit in there. You know, along the lines of the bit where you had the barbershop quartet, but with characters that you just don't recognise at all, like weird alien things.
There's a lot of filler, basically.
Basically, yeah.
They'll tell you, there wasn't one notable absentee from the cast of the Muppets, though, Pete.
Who was that, Dunk?
Well, who's the best Muppet of all? Who's the
Gonzo.
One that had the great... Who's the second greatest Muppet?
Fonzie Bear.
Hey, waka waka. Third greatest Muppet.
Piggy?
Fourth?
Kermit?
What Muppet wasn't in the film, Pete?
I don't know, Dunk. You tell me, what Muppet wasn't in the film?
Clifford, the slightly racist prawn Muppet. Or was he a lobster? Who knows? From the...
I don't think it was the prawn or the lobster bit that was the offensive part.
From the Muppets Tonight.
I think even at the time, he felt a bit dodgy to me. You know, even as a 10-year-old watching the show, I was like, is this okay?
But, you know, he was integral to that show. He was the host of that show. He's a weird thing to leave out.
I don't know, I guess in the end it was a toss-up between Clifford and 80s Robot. And I really liked 80s Robot in this film.
It had the best modem joke I've heard in 10 years.
Yeah.
So yes, all in all, a good film. It's just that ending really, really brings it down. Basically, because I don't think in a film that as jolly and kind of heartwarming as this, the bad guy's winning is really the right outcome. I think if you're going to make that decision, and it's a ballsy decision, then to 180 it over the credits just completely undermines it.
That's true. But at the same time, it doesn't detract from the film enough for me not to give it 5 out of 5.
So 5 out of 5 from you.
Yep.
For me, the ending is enough to detract from the film, and Kermit is weirdly subdued throughout. So 4 out of 5.
Heathen.
So that's still a 9 out of 10. So go see the Muppets tonight.
In order that our great Pharaoh Upshi may rule again. Yes, he shall have his fill.
Who? Ra?
And Upshi rises.
Hoorah, and Upshi rises. Hoorah, and Upshi rises. Hoorah, and Upshi rises. Never in the morning.
So this edition of Forum Watch takes us to Transylvania. Dunk, what have you been finding there?
I found Ducky Boos, the unofficial Count Duckula forum.
I love it already.
Just in case nobody's seen this cartoon series, which I will confess is amazing.
It's not quite as good as Danger Mouse.
So it's a spin-off of Danger Mouse. I think Count Duckula was a recurring villain on Danger Mouse.
I think he popped up a couple of times.
That's recurring. Couple of times is recurring. And he got his own spin-off show. The general premise is he's the latest in a long line of vampires which get reincarnated every time they get killed, but mistakenly his manservant uses ketchup instead of blood during the ritual and he comes back as a vegetarian vampire.
So what have you found on there?
It's a small community, the Ducky Boos Forum.
But, understandable.
But a passionate one. So this first post I found is titled Duckula Dreams by...
Right, so we're straight into the sex already.
By someone called Shy Chick. Has anyone ever had Duckula-related dreams?
No, nobody ever has.
That's not true. Shy Chick has. I did once a couple of months ago, she says. Duckula was sitting in his chair by the fireplace, and I was there for some reason.
Yeah, because plot doesn't matter in this.
I just kneeled down next to him. Oh my god, it is porn. She says, I just kneeled down next to him and snuggled my head into his lap and closed my eyes all content. He glances down at me, smiles and goes, oh hey, and starts stroking my face.
Oh hi, Shy Chick.
That's all I remember. I found it very realistic too. Very nice dream.
Oh god.
So Stacey W says, oh, I've had tons of my time. Mostly weird and whacked out ones.
Yeah, because there's such a thing as a normal dream about Count Duckula. Yeah.
She describes, you know, she'd like a brand new version of the show. I'm on board with her there. I'd like a brand new version of the show.
I don't know. I've seen David Jason do stuff recently. I saw that sitcom with him, The Royal Bodyguard. I don't think I'd like to see him try to be funny again.
Kaliso Talatina says, I'm sure I had one this week, but I can't remember anything of it.
That's helpful.
Well worth posting that on a forum, eh? But her sister is the one who has weird fun dreams, apparently. So for example, this one. Our dad is Mickey Mouse.
Whoa.
Yeah, I know.
That's not part of the dream. That's just...
But he's fighting with an evil twin of MM. I'm presuming that's either Minnie or Mickey Mouse.
Probably Mighty Max.
In a Dragon Ball Z battle. And this is where it gets really wacky. She was on Hogwarts. That euphemism for being on some kind of narcotic.
No, I think it just means that it's her magical time of the month. You know, oh, no sex tonight, I'm on Hogwarts.
One character who gets a lot of love on the Ducky Boos forum is Baron von Goosewing.
Isn't Baron von Goosewing the bad guy in Count Duckula?
He's the vampire hunter who doesn't realise that Count Duckula is about as threatening as you in a vicious rage.
I think it says a lot about the characters in the show that even the hardcore fans of the show are rooting for the villains.
The Ducky Boos forum seem to think of Goosewing as some kind of feathered sex symbol. He's mentioned here. I've been dreaming of Count Duckula, says Lourdes. It was something about Goosewing. Pretty obvious.
Duh.
So, yeah, duh, yeah. And I recall those dreams were real. No, they weren't. By definition, they were not real, as they were dreams.
Yeah.
I was Goosewing, and I had a plan for something, but alas, I cannot remember anymore.
Great dream, Lords.
So, Pete, you've been looking through the forum. Did you find anything?
Well, I found a couple of inevitable threads, the hottest Duckula women and hottest Duckula men threads.
And there we go.
Yeah. I don't think we really need to look much into the thread to know that it's going to be Goosewing who wins. I mean, obviously, Lourdes post. I think she's the equivalent of Reshiram guy from the Pokemon forums.
Right.
Because she says, of course, I love Goosewing to no end as he proved to be great company, protective and lovely.
She's talking like she's met Goosewing.
Who hasn't met Goosewing?
Anyone who's sane and lives in the real world?
Oh, no, if you go to conventions, he's often there, just sat at the back, kind of on his own. I don't know, Gaston says that it may seem a bit odd.
It does. Yeah. It does seem a bit odd.
But it's kind of willing the suspense of disbelief when finding such characters attractive. Simply trying to imagine them in the real world, possibly. I think Duckula in the real world would be quite grotesque.
Yeah, just kind of a human-sized ambulatory duck creature.
Yeah, I think if anything, it would be worse in the real world.
He also says, now the freaky fetishists you bump into online, whole different kettle of fish.
You are the freaky fetishists online!
Exactly!
Juno says... My own preferences actually lead towards much older men. So even the human versus avian thing is no problem for me.
It's a problem for me.
Hang on, where's the leap in logic in that? I like older men, so it's okay for me to f*** a duck. She goes on to say, actually, I've been discovering lately that I really have a thing for avians.
Okay, a little bit creepy now.
She's just been reading a book, and in it there's these ancient tribal bird demon things. They've got bird bodies, but the arms and legs of men. They completely fascinate her. They speak and everything in these really raspy, weird voices. It's awesome.
So, what were you saying about creepy internet fetishists earlier?
I don't know. I'm wondering if the author of the House of Night book series that she's talking about knows that somewhere in Florida there's a woman getting off on this seemingly innocuous fantasy stuff that they're writing.
I wonder if the person who read that is actually a member of the Ducky Boos forum. You know, they say birds of a feather and all that.
Indeed.
Someone else on this forum, Wolf's fan... says, I feel sorry for Duckula. Now, while the show is extremely funny, and the Count is a great comedian...
Hang on. Stuart Lee is a great comedian. Jack D is a great comedian. Count Duckula's an animated duck from the same studio that brought us Chilton and the Wheelies.
Anyway, while the Count is a great comedian, despite what you think, I have to say, I feel very sorry for such a tragic character.
Yes, tragic, with his castle in the middle of nowhere that can time travel to any place in time and space.
I mean, here is a poor guy who is not only descended from a long line of vampires, he is actually his own evil ancestors. A part of the character I have always loved. Actually, that's a point. The Treadocula is a deeply tragic character. I mean, imagine you're a peace-loving vegetarian who in your previous life murdered and savaged and killed thousands of people.
I don't know, I must have missed the episode where he just sat in the corner of his bedroom self-harming.
With a piece of celery.
Yeah. I think there comes a point where you're just trying to read too much into an innocent kid's cartoon from the 80s.
Well, try telling them that. In fact, don't.
Fine, no, I'm going to register. I'm going to post and tell them you're wasting your lives. Docula is good, but come on.
So you were looking through. What have you found?
Yeah, I found this one. It's titled, If Count Docula Knew About Us...
He would be afraid.
Roxy L'Amour says, does anyone think that if Count Docula was alive and found out about us on the board, he'd want to teleport his castle to our homes and throw a huge party? No!
No.
Definitely not!
Above many things, teleporting his giant castle into one of your homes would no doubt cause extensive property damage.
That's like saying, you know, do you think that Colin Baker wants to come round our homes and throw a little mini convention? No!
What do you think Sylvester McCoy wants? Oh, yeah, he'll do anything.
Yep. Sylvester McCoy is available for children's parties or just general lonely Saturday evenings in front of the telly. And I won't tell you what Sophie Aldred's willing to do. But you need to save your money for the house move.
Maybe he'd do what most people would do in this situation and keep us far away from you. In fact, maybe he'd even take out a restraining order.
I think that's likely.
But Roxy L'Amour doesn't think that, clearly, because I just saw her next post, where she follows on, where she says, he'd also probably be covered in lipstick marks all over his face. Ruffle, XDDDDDDDDDD, exclamation mark, exclamation mark. Ah!
You see, if Count Dracula was going to go around their houses for a party before this thread, he's certainly not going to now. Oh, hi, Dark Avengers fans. We got someone for you now.
That was an uncanny impression, Pete. Yep. That's right up there with your Hilary Duvall and Duncan Bannatyne impressions.
I'm as good at impressions as John Coleshaw.
I'd say that's accurate. You were, of course, doing an impression of Tommy Wiseau. Actor, director, writer.
Barely any of those things. But yeah, I am, because, of course, my new experience for you this week was the Tommy Wiseau 2003 classic, The Room.
Yeah, obviously I was aware of The Room. As someone who spends a lot of time online, I can't not be aware of The Room. There's many, many different memes sprung off it.
Yeah, I should explain for listeners who are somehow unfamiliar with The Room.
Or lucky.
The Room is a 2003 film made, produced and directed and acted and generally shat in by a guy called Tommy Wiseau. And it's kind of what I suspect is a semi-autobiographical tale about a slightly loserish, freaky guy who gets cheated on by his girlfriend with his best friend.
Yeah, I think you could probably call it a passion project, although any passion is not on display from Tommy Wiseau himself. So this film has achieved legendary status.
Not because it's good.
No, not because it's good. Because it's bad. Because it's really bad. It's bad in a bizarrely unique way. Let's go through everything that makes this film such a fascinating train wreck.
I mean, first of all, Tommy Wiseau himself.
Yeah, Tommy Wiseau himself is playing the presumably sexy, high-flying business kind of bank guy. Everything Tommy Wiseau does in this film
is hilarious.
Is wrong. It's yep. Like, if there's a wrong reading of a line, if there's an illogical character action, Tommy Wiseau will take it.
To give our listeners some idea of what we're talking about here, this is the opening line from the film.
Hi, babe. I have something for you.
Even from that point onwards, you just know that this is a very special kind of film.
Yeah.
His most famous misreading, of course, was this one.
I did not hit her. It's not true. It's bullshit. I did not hit her. I did not. Oh, hi, Mark.
And that's just an example of the other weird thing about the dialogue in the film, particularly his, is that bits of it have very clearly been dubbed in afterwards, which suggests that his line reading first time round was even worse.
And it's not just him, it's all the other characters as well.
Well, no, because obviously Wiseau directed it, so he's telling them how to say these lines to his satisfaction. Yeah, because I mean, the other characters in this, we've got Mark, who is the rugged best friend.
Mark is basically William Riker from Star Trek The Next Generation.
Yeah, only slightly in reverse, because he starts off with the beard.
Yeah.
And he's kind of a slightly clueless but pleasant character. He reacts to most scenes with, at best, I feel, belligerence.
And at most times, just a generic accepting apathy.
Yeah.
But then he shaves his beard off and he becomes, for no apparent reason, the world's biggest asshole.
By the end, he's just outright, I don't like this creep anymore, let's ditch him.
Yeah, just, there's no reason for this other than the fact that the plot needs it to happen.
Yeah. So speaking of things which happen because they have to, Lisa, Tommy Wiseau's buxom girlfriend in the room.
Yes, buxom is accurate. From the first scene, being totally in love with Tommy Wiseau, apparently.
Yep.
Suddenly, mysteriously, and with absolutely no provocation, turns into the world's biggest bitch.
Well, yeah, it's weird. At one point, it's clear that she almost has mystical powers. When she's first trying to seduce Mark, she's kind
of... Sorry, the memory of that. You know what? I have seen less clumsy seductions from you.
It's such a weird and awkward scene, isn't it? She's kind of got her hands on his face, almost sort of Spock mind meld style, and is going, forget Johnny, lover boy.
It's both simultaneously unarousing, but also phenomenally sexually threatening.
Yeah.
Also not helped by the fact they put her in a dress that makes her look really, really fat. Which she isn't.
That's it? No, she's not. She's a very attractive woman, but everything that's done to her is filmed in the most unflattering way possible.
There are a number of, I guess you could call them extended sex scenes.
Yep.
I would call them 4 minutes of actual physical pain.
Well, yeah, but it's hard to feel comfortable when you're having your belly button f***ed. Because that's one of the many idiosyncrasies of these scenes, is that all of them are filmed, I guess, so that there wasn't any actual genital contact, like, under the bed. They're all filmed with the male actor considerably higher up than they need to be.
Yeah.
There is one character who remains consistent throughout the film. I am, of course, talking about Lisa's mother.
Oh, right, yes. You know, fiction is full of irritating old people. Birds of a feather.
All of the Golden Girls.
All of the Golden Girls, yeah.
The dad in Everybody Loves Raymond.
Everybody in Everybody Loves Raymond.
Yep.
But the mother in this is... This is the problem with the room. You try and describe something, and you just don't have the vocabulary to describe just how utterly baffling it is.
I think the best word is harpy.
Yes, I guess so. But again, that doesn't emphasise just how weird...
Yeah.
How weird the character is.
She pops up quite a lot in the film, and every scene that she has is the same scene played again.
This film is basically consisted of the main plot being Mark and Lisa's affair.
Yeah.
And that's it.
Yeah.
Now, about, I would say, 25% of the scenes are related to this.
Yep.
And of those 25%, I would say about 50%. It's the same scene played over and over again with Lisa and her mother.
Okay, let's role play a typical Lisa and her mum scene.
Okay, am I Lisa or my mum?
You can be Lisa.
Okay, I'm taking my top off.
Oh, God! Oh, hello, darling.
Mum, I hate Johnny.
You have to love Johnny. He supports you.
I'm so bored of him, even though I was having really sensual sex. Well, really intended to be sensual sex.
A woman like you can't support herself.
Incidentally, how were your test results? I think that actually might be my favourite memory of the film, where her mum casually mentions that she's dying of breast cancer.
Everything goes wrong at once. Nobody wants to help me, and I'm dying.
You're not dying, Mom.
I got the results of the test back. I definitely have breast cancer.
And they never mention it again.
Yeah.
He has no relevance to the rest of the plot. She's just, her mum has cancer and is dying. Oh, you know what? We left someone out we haven't mentioned yet. Denny.
Oh, Denny is a strange man-child who...
You're a strange man-child.
I am, but my role in the film doesn't consist of just coming in and out of rooms and acting a little bit awkwardly. And there's one scene where he just follows Lisa into the house, sits down on the floor near the window, sits there for a couple of minutes, stands back up and goes out of the room. No reason at all.
There's another scene where he follows Lisa into the house and goes, "Hi, Lisa, can I kiss you?"
Yes.
She's like, "No," and he goes, "All right," then he just leaves.
Yeah.
That's it. There's no explanation, nothing.
Did you have any favourite moments to take away from this?
There's one moment near the start of the film where two of Lisa's friends come in and start having sex in the room. They're not introduced before this. They're just two random people. At no point does it say, "These are our friends," before they come in. They just come in, they start having sex on the bed. The guy starts pulling comedy expressions.
Yep.
And then they leave. But then later on in the film, in one of the pointless Tommy Wiseau and friends throw an American football around for no apparent reason while not really having a discussion. He spends literally about 3 minutes recounting the story that we saw happen earlier as if it was worth repeating. I think that's one scene shows exactly what the room is.
See, I think there is, for me, there's a different scene which shows what the room is. And that would be the famous flower shop scene.
Hi.
Can I help you?
Yeah, can I have a dozen red roses, please?
Oh, hi, Johnny. I didn't know it was you. Here you go.
That's me. How much is it?
It'll be $18.
Here you go. Keep the change. Hi, doggy.
You're my favorite customer.
Thanks a lot. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Everything about that scene is wrong. That's what struck me when I was watching it. Every single element of that scene is wrong.
I mean, I think my favourite moment in that scene is where she turns to him and says, oh, hi, Johnny, I didn't know it was you. I did actually meet him recently, because the same night I got my phone stolen, there was a room screening at the Prince Charles Cinema, which I went along to, and I did actually get to ask him about...
You met the Tommy Wiseau.
I met the Tommy Wiseau, and I did actually ask him about that line in that scene. This is what he said.
Yeah, question about the flower shop scene.
Yes.
At the beginning of it, the woman says, hi, Johnny, I didn't know it was you. Mm-hmm. Who was she expecting?
She's expecting a second doggy.
You know what, Pete? That makes about as much sense as anything else in this film.
I did actually ask him if he'd record a jingle for the podcast. I was very clear to say the name of the podcast to him several times.
Okay, but you know, I've seen The Room.
Yeah.
And I know from experience of seeing The Room that that Tommy Wiseau cannot get anything right.
No.
If there's a wrong way to do something, he's done it. So I imagine that he's got this very, very wrong.
Well, I'll allow our listeners to decide. Here's Tommy Wiseau's message to all of our listeners around the world on the Dork Avengers podcast.
Hey, guys. This is Tommy Wiseau. You turn me upon London. Bye.
Wow.
Yeah. Personalised message for all of you listening to this.
So let's make a list. Everything that's wrong with The Room. The writing, which makes George Lucas look like Oscar Wilde.
The way every line is said.
Yep. Character motivations.
Or lack thereof.
Sorry, character. Let's say character actions.
The love scenes.
The music.
Of course, the camera work, which is top class.
Oh, yeah.
And usually out of focus.
Some of the dubbing is terrible. The characters' mouths don't move to the actual audio.
Everything on the rooftop is filmed against a green screen, which is more bizarre when you realise that they filmed it on the roof of a car park outdoors.
At least 3/4 of the scenes don't have anything to do with the rest of the plot and never get brought up again.
That weird moment where Lisa's neck just starts to bulge for no reason.
Oh, God, yeah, watch out for that one if you ever watch this movie. The scene in the coffee shop where they spend 5 minutes having two random couples order coffee and cheesecake, then having Tommy Wiseau and Mark order cheesecake, before actually getting to the main part of the scene, which is the conversation.
The strange segues in dialogue.
We got a new client, and the bank will make a lot of money.
What client?
I cannot tell you, it's confidential.
Oh, come on, why not?
No, I can't. Anyway, how is your sex life?
It's hard to get across the experience of watching The Room without having seen The Room, without seeing people's reaction to The Room.
Well, it's odd you should say that, Dunk, because unbeknownst to you, while you were watching this, I was actually recording you. Because like Johnny in The Room, you know, I record everything.
What? You were recording me?
I was recording you.
Without my permission?
Without your permission. I'm like the news of the world, but hotter. So yeah, here is a montage of your best bits.
Oh, God.
What? What?
You took me drugged.
Oh, God. It's still going. I'm just grunting in bed now. Every line is delivered wrong. Every single line.
Oh, God. Stop it.
Every line, Pete. What is the point of this scene?
Oh, God. It's like the same scene over and over again.
This is 10 minutes of plot crammed into...
You expect to be
100 minutes of time.
I haven't been.
Who the fuck is he?
I think anime is where the characters' actions make more sense.
At what point were they making this? This is stupid!
I used to know a girl. She had a dozen guys. One of them found out about it, beat her up so bad she ended up in a hospital on Guerrero Street.
What a story, Mark.
If that's a completely inappropriate reaction, you know that's the one they're going to go for.
How could this not be intentional?
Well, Dunk, congratulations on surviving the room.
Yeah, I think that clip shows everybody why they should probably see the room. So what? I should probably rate this experience. It's a simultaneously a 0 out of 5 and a 5 out of 5.
Absolutely.
By every conventional measure, this film is the biggest turkey ever produced.
But I think it's the most fascinating turkey you'll ever watch.
It's painful to watch. And at the same time, you'll be laughing so hard you're almost sick.
And yet at the same time, you gave it 5 stars, making it better than The Muppets.
It's only a more enjoyable experience than The Muppets.
There you have it. The Room, better than The Muppets. Tommy, you can use that on the poster.
Come on, Eeyore. Let's go play.
I don't feel like it.
Why are you always in such a bad mood?
I have a nail in my anus.
Oh.
That's about all we've got time for another thrilling issue. What have we got coming up next time?
In the next issue of the Dork Avengers, I find a pot of honey missing from my cupboard and go on a murderous rampage of the 100-acre wood. Not a single one will survive.
And I'll be petitioning Dan Aykroyd to make a live-action adaptation of the politically correct follow-up to the real Ghostbusters, Extreme Ghostbusters.
That was the least extreme TV show of all time.
Really was. So join us for that and so much less. We've been the Dork Avengers. Goodbye.
Bye.
And so we come to the end of another pointless episode in the lives of our socially awkward duo. But remember, wherever they speak of geeks, wherever they've heard of nerds, you'll find the Dork Avengers!
Lords leaps in.
Of course she does.
And she says, "Yes, this sounds like a lot of fun. Is there any chance for Von Goosewing to join the party?"
Oh, for God's sake, you're right. She is the DuckTales Reshiram guy. Girl. Yeah. Guy, girl. Whatever the hell she is.